everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my friend Tom Fairbanks. Tom engineering and producing the show. We keep him on the other side of the glass. No, he has to be on the other side of the glass.
Well, after tomorrow morning, you will no longer have an excuse to do that.
Yeah, because you will have had both your shots.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so that's very cool. We welcome you to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zilcalo Village Studio. Today is Friday, the 26th of March, 2021. We're on 1030, Tucson's trusted source for news talk, KVOI, now in our 11th year with the Buckmaster Show, right here on the radio, and we have our worldwide live listening. That means you can listen to the program pretty much anywhere in the world as long as you're by a computer. You go to buckmastershow.com or kvoi.com. At buckmastershow.com, we have all of our podcasts and a very extensive archive dating back to our first week of the program back in January of 2011. The Buckmaster Show Live Line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On Friday, we do a big shout out to TucsonSentinel.com, one of our media partners. Dylan Smith there is the editor and publisher. He's also with us on the Live Line. Dylan, how are you?
Pretty good. Hope all is well with you and yours.
Yeah, so far so good. Also, a media shout out to Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio publications, Inside Tucson Business, the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today is with Leah Marquez Peterson, the chair of the five-member Arizona Corporation Commission. That commission oversees regulated gas, electric, water utilities, as well as pipeline safety, railroad crossings, and securities issues in the state. Chairwoman Leah Marquez Peterson was appointed to the board in 2019 by Governor Ducey. She won one of three seats on the November ballot to serve a full four-year term. Also elected were Democrat Anna Tovar and Republican Jim O'Connor. Anna Tovar and Leah Marquez Peterson were the first Hispanic women elected to statewide public office in Arizona. Leah joins us now in studio. Leah, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Bill. And thank you for having me.
I am surprised about that last sentence I just read, that you are one of two of the first. You're a pioneer.
Yes. You know, when I was first appointed by the governor's office to the Corporation Commission in May of 2019, I was told no other Hispanic woman or Latina had ever served in a statewide seat. And honestly, I said, are you kidding? I can't believe it's 2019 and this is occurring. And then that was confirmed. And with the election, yeah, both myself and Commissioner Tovar are the first elected.
How are things going with that five-member commission, three Republicans, two Democrats? Is it pretty much along like everything else seems to be this day, these days, when government bodies get together, they vote along party lines, or is there some crossover?
Well, I think a lot of the issues that we tackle at the commission are not necessarily partisan in nature. We're dealing with business and corporations and our utilities and railroad and the other items you mentioned in the intro. But I will tell you, when I was first appointed, I was very surprised at how hyper-political the commission was. It's often in the newspaper, especially in the Phoenix area, tracking comments or issues that are going on before the commission. When I campaigned to be the chairwoman of the commission, I spoke to fellow commissioners asking for their support and told them that it was my intent as chair, if I were to be elected, to tone down the commission, to ensure that we could all work towards the business and not the political divisiveness that occurred in the past. And so I'm still working towards that. It's been about 3 months as chair. In that role, I set the agendas, and I'm really trying to set the tone so that we can truly get along and focus on the business of the state.
What was this group, the Arizona Free Enterprise Club, didn't want you to be chair? Basically, they said you're too liberal.
I think they're concerned, when I saw some of their attacks on Twitter and things of that nature, that it was tenure, that perhaps someone with more time on the commission should. But that historically has not been the way the commission has selected chair. It's been based on the merits and the the platform, I guess, of that person seeking the chairmanship. And that's what I campaigned as, and luckily received majority of the votes.
Let's bring in our friend Dylan Smith. Dylan, go ahead. You're with Leah Marquez Peterson.
Yeah. Hi, Leah. Thanks for doing this.
No, thank you, Dylan. Good to hear your voice.
The chair is, hope to actually be able to see you again in person. So the chair is selected by the other commissioners, right?
Right. And so I was able to get...
Within that body. You're not, that's not like a
right.
public election.
It's not a public
chair.
Election. Okay. I won the public election, and then my fellow commissioners voted me in as chair.
Yeah. Like being the chair of a school board or the chair of the board of supervisors, it's that kind of position.
Correct, yes.
So the question, one of the things I want to dig into just a little bit, all through the pandemic, the Corporation Commission, which you wouldn't think of as being a body responsible for dealing with a health crisis, has actually been somewhat involved, especially in basically you ordered utilities to not turn off service to people if they couldn't
right.
pay. What's the current state of that? And is there a way to sort of, if any of those things are still in force, is there a way to transition out of it to kind of be equitable to everyone involved?
And that's a good question, Dylan. Back in February of 2019, March of 2019, you know, the governor made his executive decision that the state would certainly react to the COVID-19 pandemic. And we had an emergency meeting of the commission and immediately brought all of our utility CEOs onto the line in a big a WebEx call, and had their commitment that they would not disconnect people during this pandemic, that they would offer special low-income programs, that they would work with the public, and they've been very good to do so. And that includes not just electricity, but water and gas and wastewater throughout the state. We also have a limited jurisdiction with telecom companies, and they also engaged in special programs, and I've been very involved in broadband expansion during this time also. Fast forward to now, what we've been working on and having a lot of meetings about is the amount of arrears that people have. So how much mm-hmm. bad debt or past due amount have families gathered, and how do we handle that? Is it something that's manageable? Some of the utilities have forgiven some of it and doing payment plans on the rest. What's the appropriate amount of payment plan? And that's important because here we sit the end of March. We're coming into the high heat months coming
right.
soon. We usually have a moratorium in place so that folks aren't disconnected during high heat, because that's a life and death matter. So we don't want the past due amount from the pandemic overlaying an amount past due perhaps from the high heat months. So we're really working through that right now. We're also had just a meeting just last, was that earlier this week? Yeah, the days are blending.
I know, I lose track. This,
just a few days ago, I guess.
Blended together, yeah.
Yeah, but we were talking about disconnection rules in the future, and should it be based on dates, you know, May 15th through October 15th? Should it be a temperature? Should it be the National Weather Service? Emergency announcement, heat warning advisory when people shouldn't be disconnected. And we really don't want to have, we want to have zero heat illness, heat deaths. And so what's appropriate while also balancing the past due amount that folks could carry, knowing that if we put a program in place, it could be a burden to those that are paying the bills too. So it's complex. Mm-hmm. And I suggest that folks that are interested in learning more or reaching out to my office, you can find me and all the other commissioners at azcc.gov. And on our next meeting agenda, which is April 13th, we've got this whole issue. We're still unraveling and hearing from different weather experts and stakeholders now also.
What's it? Do you have any idea of the scope of, you know, those past due amounts?
We do. So we have asked APS, Tucson Electric Power, Southwest Gas, and others to give us the exact dollar amounts, how many families are impacted, payment plans mm-hmm. that have been put in place. I don't have it memorized right now, but it's all on our website through our docket, which is like an online folder we use for each of these issues. And so all that data is available there. And that's, again, through azcc.gov.
Was it 20?
But I'm reasonable in thinking that it's a pretty substantial amount, right?
It is. It's substantial. Okay. And a lot of families were in low income or financial distress during the pandemic who had never been thus before. So they weren't familiar with a lot of the low income programs and assistance we were putting together. So we had another issue in terms of how do we communicate to families through the existing infrastructure, the nonprofit organizations. In our case, Pima County One Stop, which is what we use here in Pima County. So it was a complex challenge that we're still working through right now.
And there were very highly publicized cases. I think it was the summer of 2019 where power was cut off to some people, and there were, I think, some fatalities.
Yeah, I think it was actually prior to that,
2018. Was it really?
2018. Right.
Well, again, there.
It's all blending.
It's all blended together, yeah.
We learned of the unfortunate death of someone whose power had been cut off in the APS or Phoenix area, and she had passed away. And that really emphasized how important our disconnection policies are, what's the balance that people can reach before they may be disconnected, and all of that is on the table right now as we work through it.
We're going to pause right here. Leah Marquez Peterson with us, the chairwoman of the Arizona Corporation Commissioner. She's with me in studio, and Dylan Smith is with us from TucsonSentinel.com on our live line. But right now, Dylan and Leah, I want to talk about my favorite bakery in town, and that is Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. Still a buzz here at the station. We brought in Steve, the owner and chief baker, was kind enough to give us a beautiful kind of coffee cake kringle that we brought into the station. And I can't tell you, Leah and Dylan, how fast that disappeared. I mean, we probably could have had three or four of them, and they would have lasted maybe 15 minutes longer, but they really went fast. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is the website. You can call ahead, order on the website for your bakery goods, or just walk in and enjoy a lunch and maybe a beautiful chocolate brownie for dessert. Be right back in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com. A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. It's our Friday Focus interview. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. Our guests on the live line appear courtesy of Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And on the live line today, we have Dylan Smith, the editor, publisher, and founder of the now over 10-year-old, it's actually, I think, year 11 of the online news service, TucsonSentinel.com. Leah Marquez Peterson, the chairwoman of the very important but kind of flying under the radar screen, five-member board, the Arizona Corporation Commissioner, Leah Marquez Peterson, with us. She is a Republican. There are three Republicans on the board and two Democrats. Concerning what's going to happen with the what's called deregulation, Leah, of electricity, like we saw in Texas. A lot of people pointed to the problem in Texas being that they had so many retail opportunities available to customers in Texas that when this terrible freeze happened, you had a lot of different electric companies that were involved, and rather than kind of one voice. Arizona is considering going to that retail level, and I know there's a lot of debate over it. Your two colleagues on the Republican side would like to push ahead with that, wouldn't they?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Last year, We were in the middle of elections and all these different items, we had a lot of discussion around retail competition or deregulation.
Mm-hmm.
We have not had it recently. I think in light of the Texas energy crisis, it certainly has changed the discussion. And I've had a lot of conversations, and I'm doing a lot of public speaking right now to chambers and Kiwanis and other groups about how Arizona avoids a crisis like Texas has. And so I go in there and explain to folks that we are structured differently. We are a regulated market. Our utilities have monopolistic characterizations. What that means is when you moved into your house, you didn't get a choice on electricity, water, or gas for that particular property. But that also brings with it the ability for regulators like our Corporation Commission to mandate winterization or preparation for summer or winter and different protections, I guess I'll call them, for our ratepayers throughout the state, depending on where they are and what temperatures and so on are like. The difference between Arizona and Texas, just to simplify it, is as a deregulated market, nobody was mandating that on them. And often that's quite a big cost burden to prepare for winter or summer. And so they simply didn't do a lot of that winterization that was needed and got hit with this strange freeze period in mid-February, and we saw what happened. It's important how we're structured in Arizona. And even when we talked about deregulation or market competition back in 2020 and even 2019, mm-hmm. I always expressed concern about unintended consequences. I wrote letters into our docket, or like our online folders again, that expressed some 40 different questions I had related to how this would work in Arizona, because we also have quite a differential between rural Arizona and urban. We have two big electric companies, right? APS, TEP, and a lot of rural co-ops, mm-hmm. which are like member-owned electric retail co-ops. How does rural Arizona fare in a deregulated market? So it's a complex issue. We haven't put it on the agenda in 2021 yet. I think we're tackling energy rules and disconnection policies, and we see 70 to 80 rate cases a year. So we're kind of a judicial/legislative role as Corporation Commissioner. So all of that's kind of been taking up our time more recently.
Wayne has been waiting very patiently on the live line with a question for Leah Marquez Peterson. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yes, Lee. I've at times checked your website out, the Corporation Commission's website, to find out how the individual members voted on different issues. And it's been a while since I've been on there. Do you have on your website, you know, how we voted, a button that we could push to see how the members voted on various issues?
That's a great question, Wayne. And I'll tell you that one of the other issues I brought up as I ran for chairwoman is we need more transparency. It needs to be clear for the public. Our website is very hard to maneuver through. So no, as of this moment, you cannot see how we voted like you would a state legislature or a city council. And it is one of the suggestions that we are working through now, as well as of many others. I mentioned these dockets, which is how we operate. Kind of hard to maneuver. It's not a Google search option. You have to know the docket number or exactly the name of the utility. So we're making some internal changes, and the staff has been updating us on the cost to do so. And that is one that is at the top of the list, Wayne, is making sure that you know how we're voting on various issues, and you don't have to dig through all the different dockets to figure that out. So it's a great suggestion.
Good question and suggestion. All right, Dylan Smith, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, Bill, you sort of raised the point of infrastructure a little bit, and I wanted to ask about that. You know, we've seen, in Texas with the freeze, in California with wildfires, all over the country, the state of infrastructure as far as utilities go, not just roads and bridges, but utilities, is not in great shape in general. And what is Arizona doing to work on that? And then over the past year, we've seen the importance of internet as a infrastructure, with everyone working at home. And it seems like a lot more people will be continuing to work at home than, didn't before the pandemic. And what can we do to bolster that?
Yeah, good question, Dylan. I'll start the first part of the question and tell you that because we're a regulated market here, we require the utilities to come before us with their integrated resource plans, IRPs they're called. You can read TEPs, Tucson Electric Powers, on their website now if that interests you, and certainly the other utilities. But that's their plan over the next 10 to 15 years of exactly how they're going to improve their infrastructure. They're going to utilize different types of energy generation. They're estimating the load or the demand for energy in the market and growth. All of that is done, and we review it. We're in the middle now of reviewing APS's integrated resource plan at this moment, and then we confirm or support that plan as we move forward. Or in the past, sometimes the commission has denied it and made the utility go back to the plate. The difference, though, this time with the IRP is that they've had a lot of stakeholder input. So we're right in the middle of assessing those IRPs, and that helps us ensure that we have that infrastructure in place, because obviously the priority for anyone who supported somebody for commissioner is that it's reliable, it's sustainable, and it's affordable. And that's the three-legged stool all of this needs to sit on, and reliability is key as part of that integrated resource plan. As I shift to infrastructure for telecom and for broadband, I've been particularly concerned. At the beginning of the pandemic, I joined a broadband stakeholder group that was statewide. I'm the only commissioner or commissioner office that was part of that conversation. But it was interesting because it was pulled together kind of grassroots with advocates and state agencies and telecom companies and the Department of Education, the state libraries, everybody on a call every Monday through this entire pandemic, and we continue to meet. And the focus of this task force was that Arizona has so many long-term needs. We need fiber in the ground in different places because we're so dependent on high-speed internet for kids in school and for all of us doing work. And we've got so many disparities and challenges, especially in rural and tribal Arizona. But this stakeholder group was saying, what can we do short term? What can we do this next month? Because the kids can't wait a year as we figure out how to get broadband expansion. And I'll tell you, it's been a really great experience. I think the heroes are really our state libraries, who've put together a website called connect-arizona.com. I've tried to promote that widely also. Folks can go on and find about free public Wi-Fi spots, how to get low-cost computers, and get how to use the technology once you have it. The Department of Education had quite a challenge, right, in identifying not only schools that were challenged with internet, but further into the families' homes, which home was struggling. We heard stories, very sad stories during the pandemic, of kids sitting outside McDonald's on a laptop or a Starbucks trying to go to school. And so there's some great resources and connections that have been made short term through this task force. As a commissioner, I have a few tools that I can utilize also. I've put on our April agenda, as a heads up, a modification of Arizona's Universal Service Fund. That's a fee that we're already all paying on our phone bills. Right now, it goes into a bucket to help fund high-cost areas of the state. It is not utilized for broadband expansion. I would like my fellow commissioner's support to expand this beyond fiber for high cost to actually help with broadband expansion in high cost areas too. So I'm hoping they'll support that, and I'm going to be talking about that April 13th at our next open meeting.
What about renewable energy mandates? For years, Arizona has been, it's been talked about, you know, we need to have more solar opportunities and energy. Where are we on those mandates right now for each of the electric companies?
And, you know, I'll start
people
by saying,
people may not understand what that is.
There's a lot of confusion, I think, around solar. In 2018, Arizona was actually number two in the nation in solar deployment. So we're doing very well. There's no reason Arizona can't be the king of solar or queen of solar for the nation because of our sunshine, right? Makes a lot of sense. Right now, the renewable energy standard, it's called, was set in 2006, so quite a while ago, that mandated 15% of our energy generation from solar. We're around, if you pull the entire state together, we're around 11 or 12% right now, with TEP doing more and APS and others. But if you count the entire state and all generation, we're around 11 to 12%. But what we're in the middle of currently, and we ended the end of 2020 discussing, was our energy rules. What direction do we want to go in terms of Arizona's future energy status? The states around us have set very clear goals and are using that to attract economic development to their state. So I think it's important that we move forward with energy rules, and I support 100% clean energy with zero carbon emission. Now, as I've gone out to Kiwanis and Rotaries and Chambers and so on to talk about that, I'm being technology agnostic, which means that I'm not saying how we'll get there. I'm not stating what percentage solar or natural gas or nuclear, which will all be important parts of this as we move forward. But it really is about that ultimate goal of 100% clean energy. And that's the direction we're going right now as part of a commission, rather than sticking just to that renewable energy standard.
Is the nuclear power plant under your portfolio at the Arizona Corporation Commission?
It is, and most people don't realize it's the largest in the nation.
Wow.
It provides about 31% of our energy in the state, and it's a very important asset that we have. It's one of the reasons we didn't see California, like rolling blackouts during this past summer. We have a nuclear power plant, as well as other structures in place, but it's an important asset to our state.
Kay has called us at 790-2040. Go ahead, Kay. You're with Leah Marquez-Peterson.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, my question is about nuclear energy. Do you think that we need another nuclear power plant in the state? And are we sending any other energy to other states in the neighborhood?
Yeah, good question, Kay. At this point, I believe our current Palo Verde nuclear plant is not at full capacity, so there's still room to grow there. I've not heard of any plans for an additional nuclear power plant, and it tends to be very controversial when that happens.
Very.
So nothing new at that point, but our power plant has been providing some really important energy to the state. Your second question, I'm forgetting it right now, was related
to...
Are we
exporting energy from Arizona to other states?
We are. What's interesting is we are part of a Western energy grid, I guess you would, if you're defining it that way. And our energy, our priority is for the state of Arizona, but periodically we receive energy from California when they have excess solar. A lot of times it's free. They need to get it off their grid. During the recent California rolling blackout crisis this past summer, we sold excess energy to California that we could do at the time because we had our own regional heat wave happening at the time and were able to make money that I was assured, because I had an emergency meeting around that the funds would come back to ratepayers, and they've confirmed that it has. So you do see that exchange of buying and selling continuously among the different states as demand ebbs and flows.
Quick question before I give it back to Dylan Smith. If we ever were going to go to a desalinization, would that again fall under the Arizona Corporation Commission, desalinization of water?
Yeah, I've heard of plans in the past, especially when I ran the Tucson Hispanic Chamber of work that Mexico was doing right. related to desalinization. I've not heard of recent plans related to Arizona. Perhaps there are folks working on that. If it was related to our existing water companies being engaged in that, they are regulated if they're private investor-owned. So I'm sure, yes, our commission would have a role.
Dylan Smith, a final question from Dylan.
Not about the Corporation Commission, but more generally about politics. There's going to be, again, an open seat down here in southern Arizona in the next congressional election. Do you have any intent or interest in tossing your hat into that ring again?
Oh, thanks for the question, Dylan. I'm getting that a lot right now, actually. But, you know, I'm focused on the Corporation Commission. I was just elected to a 4-year term, elected chairwoman, and I really find the work very interesting. So I am continuing to focus on the commission.
Is that a no?
That's a no at this time, yes.
Dylan, any final ACC-related questions?
I think we covered a pretty good gamut there.
So, all right. The next big thing, then, you're focusing on in April, you mentioned that meeting. And where can people follow along? Or are these live streamed or what, the meetings?
Yes, they can see them live at azcc.gov. Mm-hmm. Some of those meetings tend to be many hours. I do put on my Arizona Corporation Commission, Leah Mitkus-Peterson, Facebook page. I call it Chairwoman's Chat. It's like a 3 to 4 minute summary of the recent meeting. So if they wanted to see what are things we covered, they could certainly follow my Facebook page and learn more about the work we're doing.
All right. Leah Marquez-Peterson, thank you. Good to see you.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. Thank you.
Thanks for coming into the studio and stay safe. Dylan, stick around. Dylan will be joined by Jim Nintzel on the live line, and we'll talk a little politics as we continue on the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Be right back.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over 5 buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience prioritizing safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Our thanks to Leah Marquez Peterson, the chairwoman of the Arizona Corporation Commission, for our Friday Focus interview. Dylan Smith, editor-publisher, TucsonSentinel.com, stays with us on the live line. And we are now joined by Jim Nintzel, the senior editor for the Tucson Weekly. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Bill. I got my second shot this morning, so I'm just waiting to see what kicks in later in the day. If you lose me on this call, I've had some kind of interaction.
Is it the
hopefully it doesn't happen.
Moderna or Pfizer?
I'm a Moderna man.
Okay. I had a little bit of a 48-hour reaction to Moderna, but we'll see. Mine might have been a very small percentage of people have what I had. But anyway, Dylan asked Leah Marquez Peterson, very appropriately enough, about whether or not she would be interested in the soon-to-be-open Congressional District 2 seat with Ann Kirkpatrick announcing her retirement. We had two Democrats now officially on board, Kirsten Engel, who will be my guest Tuesday on the show. Kirsten, the state senator, is officially a candidate in CD2. And now Dr. Randy Fries, state representative, is also involved. But Jim or Dylan, have you heard anything about any Republican names who are imminently interested in this?
Well, that was not a no from Leah Marquez Peterson about taking another stab at running for Congress. I was going to say to Jim, you know, if you do drop off the call, it might not just be the shot. It might be the governor putting out a hit on you after that editorial you wrote earlier this week.
Thank you, Dylan. Quite the headline. Thank you very much.
What was that headline again?
I think it was Ducey to Pima County, drop dead.
Oh, geez.
That's That's pretty succinct, I will say.
And I'm sure we'll get into that topic later. So, but on the congressional front, I think we're going to just our friend Hank up at editor up at the Yellow Sheets of Capital Times calls it the CD whatever, and I think that's an important thing to keep in mind because we don't know. Not only do we not know what the number is going to be, but we don't even know what the district's going to look like. And I think what you've got is pretty much anybody with some political ambitions down here, whether they're in the legislature or elsewhere, starting to size up, you know, whether or not they can start laying the groundwork for fundraising. You know, the nice thing about the Republicans pretty much eviscerating resign to run is you can have your exploratory committee and go out and raise money and, you know, test the waters and build your name up to ID up a little bit. And then, you know, when the time comes, you know, figure out whether the district looks like something you could win and then pull the trigger or resume your statehouse plans or what have you. So it's going to be an open congressional seat is like hunting season for me and Dylan. And, you know, there's going to be a lot out there to follow once we learn more about the boundaries of this thing.
Yeah. Dylan, unless you've got something more on that front, I do want to switch over to the ongoing battle, and it just heats up, doesn't it, between Pima County and Governor Ducey. Mm-hmm. First, it was about the FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management organization saying that they would open, or wanted, Pima County wanted FEMA to open up a point of distribution vaccine site in Pima County, and the governor and his health director, Dr. Chris, said no to that, and now the governor lifting restrictions, pretty much all COVID restrictions, that's meeting with all sorts of opposition from City of Tucson and Pima County. But whether or not that opposition would have any teeth in it, that's still to be seen. Dylan?
It's certainly a battle of words in public and wills behind the scenes between a whole lot of people in Pima County leadership and the City of Tucson and Governor Ducey and his folks. And Jim's piece earlier this week certainly summed up a lot of the attitudes. It may be a little bit overstating the case, but it certainly seems like there's what so often happens in this state is, those of us here in Southern Arizona get the short end of the stick compared to what's going on in Maricopa County and Phoenix. That is, absolutely happening. We're not getting the sort of vaccine supplies that we should have for our population down here. And that makes it just that much more difficult to get it to people who really, really need it.
Yeah, I think we're in a race against these variant viruses. We want to get people vaccinated as quick as possible. FEMA is setting up these sites to help get out into minority and low-income neighborhoods. Pima County has that place. Their argument is get these vaccines going faster. The governor's argument seems to be, I want all the vaccine and I'll decide what to do with it. And that just seems like, if you compare those arguments, I think the county wins. I just think that the governor's intransigence on this particular point is baffling, honestly. I mean, here is an opportunity to get out there. And he's saying, well, if you give it to us, we can, move it through our own places at the U of A. But the point is to get into these other minority and low-income neighborhoods. The suggestion the county can't run one of these clinics is ridiculous. They're already running these clinics. And then to say that, it will take too much time to set up, well, you've wasted 2 weeks with saying no to this whole proposal. So,
It is about getting those doses and shots, bringing them closer to people so they're that much more accessible so we can get it done more quickly before, we're already seeing so many of these variants, which are, more infectious, spread more easily, and some of them are, in fact, more deadly. And, the faster we get as many people as possible vaccinated, the sooner we can stop this in its tracks.
And today, the University of Arizona announced just today that I believe there are 6 confirmed cases on the U of A campus of the United Kingdom variant. So the variants are in town, guys.
I think we should name a Ducey variant at this point. And the whole other issue of lifting the restrictions this week and opening up the vaccine, I think Dr. Garcia called it a Hunger Games scenario where now everyone's going to try to get vaccines. My wife was on the phone at 11 a.m. and on the internet at 11 a.m. and there were just no appointments available. And it kept refreshing and telling her there was an appointment and then saying there wasn't. So, there's going to be this mad rush to try to get them, skipping over people who are medically compromised in the process. So I think there's been some bad decisions made this week by the governor's office. I think the numbers are definitely trending in the right direction. There's a lot of good news. More people are getting vaccinated. The case counts are much lower than they were in the midst of our winter surge, but we want to keep them that way. And I feel like we've got our boot on the neck of this virus and now we're letting up. And I just think it's probably could have gone a few more weeks before pulling all the strings.
And now you have businesses with a decision to make. Do they still require that customers coming into their establishment wear a mask? The state says they don't have to do that, but if the customer gets on the Facebook and social media and says X store says we're no longer requiring masks, that can hurt business. It can go both ways, guys.
I'm seeing a whole lot of businesses, you know, very quickly stating that they are going to continue to require that their patrons wear masks and that they're going to, you know, keep social distancing in place inside them. Even some of the, at least one of the businesses here in Pima County that sued the county over some of these measures came out yesterday and said, you know what, we're going to require people to wear masks when they're in our establishment. They sued to make it to toss out the county's measures, but they even they are not ready to just say, yeah, come on in and don't wear a mask.
And I think that's because they recognize that, again, the more precautions we take, the sooner we get this thing over with for real, and we don't have to worry about wearing masks and all the rest of that. So, you know, it's certainly my hope that we can continue to follow the instructions of our of the health experts and keep doing the things that are keeping these cases in decline.
I think there are some smart business people who realize that what is best for their business right now and long term is that the, you know, the people who pay their bills feel safe in doing business with them. And if people don't feel safe, if enough people don't feel safe, that's not going to play well for them.
All right. Out of time. Dylan Smith, thank you very much. We'll look for your work at TucsonSentinel.com. Jim Nintzel, taking a couple of days off from his duties with the Tucson Weekly. Have a great weekend, Jim.
Hey, thank you so much. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay, and Dylan,
Take care, everybody.
Have a great weekend. Thank you very much. Everybody stay safe. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line guests appear courtesy of Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Coming up next, Weekend Watch with Matt Russell. Buckmaster on a Friday. Be right back.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Weekend Watch with Matt Russell is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where it is time to open up the doors. And I know the people over there are so welcoming, and they've been waiting a long time to welcome out-of-state visitors back to New Mexico. And once again, New Mexico is open to tourism. Only a three-hour drive east of Tucson. So much to do. You can find out about all the recreation opportunities and some great places to stay by visiting their fine website, southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now the longtime host of Weekend Watch, award-winning Tucson publicist, Inside Tucson business food and beverage columnist, Mr. Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
Well, I am stirring it up, baby, on a Friday. Can I call you baby, Bill? Can
we just sure. Call me baby. Call me Bucky. Call me Bill. Call me whatever you want, but call me ready for lunch. How's that? Or lunch or dinner? Oh, boy. Got
so the newest restaurant. Yeah, we got a new restaurant to report. Another one, if you can believe it. It just opened its doors in downtown. It's called the El Mesquite Grill and Taqueria. They anchor the newly built DoubleTree Hotel downtown that's connected quite literally to the Tucson Convention Center. Longtime local chef Virginia Wooters has created a menu that's kind of a testament to contemporary Southwest cuisine. We're talking meats grilled over flaming mesquite, homemade tortillas, native vegetables and beans, a wonderful bar with great cocktails, premium wines, a lineup of all local brews, and the patio, Bill, it overlooks historic Cushing Street, and it's surely going to become a favorite happy hour hangout. And what better time than now to start the weekend? El Mesquite leads my Weekend Watch pick.
Any news for fans of the Vietnamese cuisine?
Oh, yes. Another fairly new restaurant is serving a growing community of Tucson's banh mi enthusiasts, or shall I say banh mi addicts. It's called Bondicted, and they're piling up several variations on the Vietnamese banh mi sandwich theme at their Orange Grove and La Cholla location. Now, they have banh mi's with ham and pork belly, lemongrass, beef, barbecue pork, even a breakfast version with eggs, and of course, they have all that traditional crusty bread baked locally with pickled veggies and cilantro, jalapenos. I went yesterday for the first time, and believe me, Bill, it was banh mi bliss. So you can check out Bondicted this weekend.
And which particular banh mi did you decide upon?
I went right for the pork belly. What a surprise that is, Bill.
What's going on with our friends at Firehouse Brewing Company? They've done such a great job over the years, Matt.
Yeah, and they got something fun planned for tomorrow for those that fancy those snappy little critters from the swamp. They're going to be hosting the Oro Valley Crawfish Boil tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. at their northwest location, which is Oracle, just north of Linda Vista Boulevard. Live crawfish has been flown in fresh from New Orleans. It's going to be seasoned and boiled on site, plated together with potatoes and corn, andouille sausage, and of course, Cajun dirty rice. And if I were a betting man, I'd bet that there'll be plenty of fire truck brews to wash that boil down. Tickets are only $19.99, but you have to purchase them in advance. And you can find that link on Fire Truck's Facebook page, Fire Truck Brewing Company's Facebook page. Craft beer and crawfish on a 72-degree day. Yes, please.
Go for it. Thank you so much, Matt. Have a great weekend, buddy.
You too. Thanks, Bill.
Matt Russell with our Weekend Watch. All right. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of my company, Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music that you hear at the open of our program, composed by our friend Chris Stefan. Thanks to Rose Brandt, everyone here at KVOI, including engineer-producer Tom Fairbanks, the whole team at Bustos Media. Have a great weekend, everybody.